So I have a shop and I have a lot of, say, repetitive motion injury, anything from tennis elbow to carpal tunnel to shoulder replacement. When I have a claim every month, but guess what my insurance company says? They're going to raise your rates or they're going to drop you from the program completely. So for me as a manufacturer, I need to understand where my injury is coming from and how to prevent them. And a lot of insurance companies will offer you a partnership.
Growing a business requires a holistic approach that extends beyond sales and marketing. This approach needs alignment among people, processes, and technologies. So if you're a business owner, operations, or finance leader looking to learn growth strategies from your peers and competitors, you're tuned into the right podcast. Welcome to the WBS Podcast, where scalable growth using business systems is our number one priority. Now, here is your host, Sam Gupta.
Hey everyone, welcome back to another episode of the WBS Podcast. I'm Sam Gupta, your host and principal consultant and digital transformation consulting firm, Elevate IQ. The risk profile of manufacturers plays a critical role in how insurance companies and regulatory agencies perceive them, including their cybersecurity standard operating procedures, their ability to prevent injuries, and their consistency to hit their KPIs. All of these factors may have significant growth implications for manufacturers. In today's episode, we have our guest, Michael Schoggenhofer, who discusses how insurance companies evaluate manufacturers' risk profile. He also shares his insights into how your risk profiles can impact your bottom line because of increased premiums, denied claims, or inability to be insured. Finally, he discusses several issues related to manufacturers' risk profile and their insurability, such as cybersecurity issues, equipment breakdown, and shop floor injuries. Let me introduce Michael to you. Michael Schoggenhofer has been in manufacturing for over 40 years, working for multinational and small companies, assisting them with process and operational improvements. Mike led the implementation of an ERP system to manage over 40,000 pieces of tooling and machinery. Mike has spoken at numerous industry events like FABTECH, MWFPA, NEWMA, Indiana Safety Council, and others. With that, let's get to the conversation. Hey, welcome to the show, Mike.
Thanks, Sam. Glad to be here.
Of course, my pleasure. Just to kick things off, do you want to start with your personal story and your current focus?
Well, I've been in manufacturing for 40 years. I was involved with manufacturing back in the 1970s. I worked for a multinational company, then started my own business. We were so successful that we sold out shortly after that, and I have worked for companies after that from as small as 10 people to as large as hundreds of thousands in multiple countries. Very exciting manufacturing career for me. I was able to work with as simple things as machining steel to as high-tech stuff as computers and aerospace and the automotive industry.
Okay, amazing. So we have one of the standard questions that we ask every single guest that come on the show. And that is going to be, Mike, your perspective on growth. When you think of business growth, what does it mean to you?
Well, first of all, I hear multiple things. And one of the indicators that I look at it is the PMI. It's the Purchasing Manager Index that gets put out by the supply chain industry. And for manufacturing, when it covers all 15 subsegments, it's been growing. It's actually in February, it was the highest in 6 months. So that is a basic indicator that shows manufacturer what are the orders that are sitting out there and waiting to be fulfilled. On the other side, if you listen to the feds and the government, they're forecasting anywhere between a 3 and a 6% growth in manufacturing throughout the year 2021. So as a manufacturer, that should highlight a lot of good things for growth, expansion. The only things that I kind of see for manufacturing sector is that the supply chain is still a little bit shaky. One of the supply chain issues that might be an issue later this year is the steel supply. We do have trade barriers implemented for steel from Asia or specifically China. That if those barriers stay in place and the industry really grows at 6%, we might have to think a little bit different on increasing our steel production in the United States or changing some of the trade barriers that we have implemented in the last few years.
Okay, amazing. Thanks for those thoughts. And I always like to connect the dots. So Mike, I think we were discussing this during our last meeting, also in the pre-show, that you have a very interesting background because you were doing a lot more manufacturing. You ran your own manufacturing business, and now you are focused on insurance. So typically, I would not see anybody who has been manufacturing dealing with the insurance right now. So why is manufacturing expertise so important, number one, for the insurance company who is, let's say, working on approving the claims or evaluating what premium they should be paying? So tell us why subject matter expertise of manufacturing matters in case of evaluating which insurance manufacturer should be buying.
It's a twofold answer here, Sam. One is for the insurance industry, especially for my company, we insure about 6,500 manufacturers in the United States.
Okay.
We need to understand what their business is. You know, a manufacturing, basically, when you ask people what's manufacturing, they will tell you they make things. Well, the government classifies manufacturing, and we cover everything from food manufacturing to automotive industry and in between, ready mix, wood, everything. So my expertise to the company comes in by understanding those segments, what actually happens to make whatever they do, to make that widget. You know, if you're a bakery, you're a manufacturer. What does it take for bakery to make a good product? What are the risks to that bakery? On the other hand, we also need to understand what's the risk to a sawmill? What's the risk to a machine shop? What's the risk to a computer manufacturer? So that's where I bring my industry insight to the insurance industry. Every business has different risks. We need to evaluate this risk. We need to analyze this risk. That's where I come in, working with our loss control to say, okay, this is a good manufacturer. The risk for product recall, specifically in the food industry, is high or low. We're going to accept the risk and cover them, or we're going to turn them down and says we are not willing to take that risk because you don't have safety things in place to prevent a product recall. On the other hand, my expertise comes in for the customer. If they have a policy with us, they can call on me and say, hey, we have an issue here. We want to implement a cybersecurity policy. We want to implement lean manufacturing. We have a lot of lost time due to broken equipment. What can we do? What should we do to be a better manufacturing, to increase our bottom line, to grow the business? How can you help us to increase our OEE, which is overall equipment effectiveness, which is a very good measurement of how your operation runs?
We are going to be talking a lot more about risk, because when we look at the insurance, especially in my experience, there are two ways to pay for the insurance companies. Number one, you can actually have all the policies that insurance companies care for, not the policies, the procedures and the things that they care for, right? And then you might not have to spend as much in your premium. Your chances of getting approved for the claims may be higher if you design your processes as per the insurance companies or the way they care for, and if you reduce the risk from their perspective. So let's talk about some of the risks that you commonly see, Mike. And in your experience, let's say if the risk is going to be higher, obviously they are going to be paying a lot more in premium. So what are some of the common risks that you see across the manufacturing? And let's say if you were running these manufacturing shops, what would you change for them so that it's a win-win for you as well as for them?
I think, Sam, you hit it on a point here. Insurance is really based on risk assessment, on they evaluate you on the risk. So let's say, for example, everybody, most states require you to carry workers' compensation for your employees. Yep. Basically, what workers' compensation is, something happens to an employee and it is a work-related accident, your insurance picks up certain medical costs, even certain hourly pays or monthly payments to the employee, because if they can't work right now, they need a wage income. So workers' compensation is something that in most states in the United States, you have an employer has to carry. In some states, the rates are set by the state insurance board. In some rates, the insurance company can set their own rate. So the way rates are set is as higher your risk is, as higher your claims are, as more you're paying. So, for example, if I have a shop and I have a lot of, say, repetitive motion injury, anything from tennis elbow to carpal tunnel to shoulder replacement, when I have a claim every month, but guess what my insurance company says? We're going to raise your rates or we're going to drop you from the program completely. So for me as a manufacturer, I need to understand where my injury is coming from and how to prevent them. And a lot of insurance companies will offer you a partnership, say, okay, you give us the data, We're going to help you look at the data. And once we have the data, we can work with you. Let's go back to repetitive motion injuries. Very, very often you see that we can come in and the insurance carrier comes in. Some insurance carrier have their own workplace ergonomist, some contractor. They come in and they look at the workstation with you. And let's say you have your manufacturing process requires to put a round peg in a round hole. Well, we can look at it and says, well, if we raise the table, if the employer stands, if we make the part lighter, if we make it heavier, we can reduce that risk of injury and hence help you lowering your policy. Again, you know what the product needs to be looking like. We can help you, once we know where the issues are, reduce that by alternatives. And a lot of times in things like this, I hate to say this, a lot of people don't like to hear it. Automation is very good to help you reduce repetitive motion injury. But going back to this, we need the data. Where did it happen? How did it happen? We can analyze the data with you, or you could even come to us and say, I got the data analyzed. I know where my problem is, but I don't understand the ergonomics part. Or where I can help them is, hey, you got an expert on staff that understands the automation part. Can he come in and help us how to automate that step?
Okay, so let's talk about the quality of data, right? As you know, especially in the SMB manufacturing space, I don't know how reliable the data is going to be, let's say, even if they produce. Because a lot of time, as you know, how they compile the data, it's probably going to be, even if they have, let's say, some sort of ERP system, they are probably going to be doing a lot of their processes on the spreadsheet. And as you know how spreadsheets work, I mean, when you shake one hand to the next, the story changes, right? So I don't know, from your experience, when you work with these manufacturers, do you trust on their data, how reliable the data is, how consistent the data is with respect to the processes that they might be conducting on the shop floor? What are the chances of approval in your experience when you look at this data, when you look at the story? Do you feel that the story is believable or do you not believe that?
Well, I think, first of all, data hygiene and data cleanliness is very critical. And statistical process control, I think, under Demick, some of the things, the rules that he applied, like understand how the data is collected. You mentioned spreadsheets, and I can give you an example there. Years ago, I took over a machine shop, and we were tracking machine downtime, plant downtime, parts output, and part quality. And I ran these three shifts 7 days a week. And I would come in, and I would have literally printed out on clipboards, written numbers, two problems. Yep. It wasn't real time. Second of all, I hate to tell you this, but people write numbers down the wrong way. Instead of 312, they write down 322. So they write down, it is a real problem. Plus handwriting. I'm sitting here in the office. The person that wrote that number down isn't here. So for me, the data becomes less accurate, less relevant, because it's delayed. And then I need to wait. Let's say I call this employee from third shift, but he sleeps. I don't get hold of him till 3 o'clock in the afternoon. Well, was it 312 or was it 322? Well, that's all delay for me to respond to that information, that data that he had. Let's say we had a quality issue, but did they throw 3.312 parts away? Is it 3.2 parts? What is that number? How critical is it for me to respond? So data accuracy, how is it collected, on data transition, and I believe, I'm a strong believer in real-time data. So if you can automate data collection, for example, you put a vision system behind the machine, one part makes it through, the image matches it, immediately upload that to your data system, your ERP system, MRP system, MES. You have real-time information. I can look that up anytime. It says, oh, at 1 o'clock this afternoon, 7 good parts made it off the machine, rather than relying on a manual tracking system that's hours, days, or even weeks delayed.
So let's touch a little bit on the other topic now with respect to the cybersecurity insurance. Obviously, there is a lot of fear overall in the manufacturing community about the cybersecurity. In fact, I'm actually going to tell you one story from my experience. So I was talking to one of the manufacturing executives, and they wanted to explore the ERP implementation. When I walked into the shop floor And the manufacturing executive told me that I go to a lot of different conferences. I go to NAMM, and these guys keep talking about these cybersecurity issues, and I'm extremely afraid. So one thing that I don't want you to do is I don't want you to touch any of the machines, okay? So your place starts in the office. Just stay in the office. You are going to be doing the finance. You are probably going to be doing a little bit of inventory, but you don't touch my shop floor because I cannot afford to stop my manufacturing shop. So let's say if you analyze the story, Mike, what would you say to this executive? Are they approaching the cybersecurity issues in the right manner? Secondly, as we have discussed this, that insurance can cover a lot of different cybersecurity outage. So should manufacturing executive be worried about any of the cybersecurity issues from the ERP perspective?
Yes, because your ERP system is an electronic data system. It all depends if you store the information on site, if you store it on the cloud, however you store it. But your systems are usually connected. So let's say you have an ERP system, you run your email system, and they're all running through a server on your site. You get an email coming in, phishing email or spam or whatever. One of the employees clicks on the notice, cyber security hack email can infect your whole system. So yes, any system that uses any kind of data or electronic information and is connected can be hacked. The other thing is, story out of my life, is I put a machine shop with 65 CNC machines on Bluetooth communication. So there were no more wires. Well, you know, Bluetooth can be hacked. So yep. You need to have, first of all, I think cyber has two or three avenues. There's external avenues, people that are literally out there that say, I want to benefit of somebody's loss. I break into their system, I hack on the system. The other thing is you have internal loss. And the internal loss, there's two ways. Could be an accidental. I go in a file, a shared drive, an L drive, and I hit delete by mistake. I delete all the information or corrupt it in another way. The other thing, which is actually for some manufacturers has become a real risk, is a disgruntled employee.
Yeah.
You say you put somebody in corrective action. I have access to your mainframe where you store your drawings, your proprietary info. I go in there and I send that out to the world, or I corrupt the information in a different way. So a lot of times what I recommend is to have a cyber security protocol, like an SOP established for your company, where you're addressing what devices can employers, companies, contractors, people like yourself, when you go in there, you bring a smartphone in. If that's hacked, you walk around to my facility. How can I ensure that it doesn't infect my system? So there is a lot of physical security that you can put in, but you also need to put education into your people. For example, any financial transaction, I love to see when our customers say, hey, we have two authentication factors. So yeah. The CEO and the CFO need to approve any purchase, any expenditure over $2,000. Money could be higher or lower, depends on what kind of risk you. If I don't see this, it's a little bit scary that one person can authorize a transaction of $50,000. So that's some of the things that I look at it when we talk cybersecurity. What do you have in place? For example, any machine today has an external USB port. Can any employee plug their headset in, their smartphone, their laptop, whatever they bring in, and infect that device? So if you have locked up USB ports, certain people that can only access it. If you have vendors coming in, do they have a guest network to the vendors to log in that is separate from your operational network? Do you scan their screen, their computers that they bring in? And that's all things that I would look at it and say, you have none of this? The risk and the recommendation for me to provide cyber coverage to you, probably a no. If you have all of those systems in place, yes, I would say you think about it, you take it serious. On the other hand, I would also say that as a manufacturer, you need to partner with somebody that can not just say, oh, when something happens, I pay for the repair for the computer, but you get taken into court because your customer's data is corrupted, or your employer's social security numbers got pulled from your human resource system. You can get dragged into court. Is my insurance carrier willing to defend me into court? So there is a lot of questions as a CEO, CFO, you should be asking your insurance carrier, how far, what kind of coverage do you provide, or do you just buy me a new laptop because my laptop was hacked? And the other thing for manufacturing, which is probably most critical, your reputation, your name, how do you restore that? If they would say, well, Sam got hacked. All his information is out there. I'm not doing business with Sam anymore. How do your carrier help you reestablish your reputation as a good business?
Okay, so let's talk about some of these touch points based on the cloud technology. And I don't know how familiar you are with the cloud technology. In case of cloud, obviously you are reducing your risk a bit, but I don't know how many manufacturers truly understand what cloud really is, to be honest. Okay, so in case of cloud, let's say if you are utilizing cloud versus on-prem, in case of cloud, you are not really the custodian of data. That is not really hosted in your premises. So even if you are hacked, you are probably not going to be jeopardizing the data as much as you would. Let's say if you are storing this on your premise, and some of these companies that are actually building some of these bigger systems, you talk about any of the bigger systems such as your CRM systems or ERP or MES or e-commerce, right? These companies are far better equipped in terms of protecting your data, in terms of having the right security analysts that can that are better positioned to be able to handle such threats. So what would you say? Let's say if you have two different scenarios here. In number one, one manufacturer is hosting, let's say, everything on-prem. They have their Bluetooth devices exposed. They have their laptops exposed. Versus you have another manufacturer that has, let's say, they cannot do much about their laptops. They have to have that on-premise. But then from the server side of things, they are utilizing cloud technology. Would you think that both of these scenarios are going to have similar level of risk? Or the cloud one is going to have lower risk, higher risk? What would be your perspective on that?
Well, the cloud, as you said, is definitely a safer way. Man, there is nothing 100%. Man, that's why you have cyber insurance. Nothing is, but the cyber risk on a cloud-based provider or protection is a lot better than when everybody's device is just roaming free. So I agree with you. Cloud gives you some kind of protection. The other thing is what I want to mention at this time is if you're small manufacturing, a lot of times we don't understand that kind of technology and that risk. It's really good to partner with a cybersecurity company. I know there's a cost involved, but you need somebody coming in to tell you because you, again, I go back to your manufacturer. You're good at making that widget. You're not a data warehouse or protector. So what you need to do is you need to find somebody, if you don't have the IT staff that is skilled in this, to say, okay, I'm gonna help you this. Our company, for example, we hire a company, they get paid to try to hack our system every day, 24/7. They try to break in, and every time they find a gate into our system, they let us know and we put a patch in there, we put a security system in there, we lock that way that they can get in. So it's the same thing with your product. If you don't test your product, if you don't measure your product, you have to look at cyber the same way. Measure it, protect it as good as you can. And if you don't have the expertise, partner with somebody that has that expertise.
Okay, so in terms of partnering with a cybersecurity firm, in case of cybersecurity also, there are different areas. So what would be your recommendation? In case of cybersecurity, there is going to be OT side of things that actually looks, let's say, in the health and safety side of problems that you mentioned towards the beginning of the conversation. And there is like the real cybersecurity or IT security folks, they look at primarily into IT and cybersecurity. So when you are partnering with these firms and when you are recommending to partnering with these firms, Mike, do you typically recommend that they should have both of these expertise? They should be hiring multiple people who have these expertise? What would your recommendation to the manufacturing executive?
Well, my thing is, as a manufacturer that says, okay, I don't understand my cyber risk at all. I need a professional coming in. I need to contract that with somebody. What else in manufacturing, there's two risks, and you kind of touched on it. There's the IT risk, and then there's the operational technology risk. You know, you're buying a machine, you bring in technology. So you need to ask questions, just like when you buy a new car, you go to the dealership and says, okay, what's the fuel consumption in there? What are the safety features? So when you select your cyber company that protects you, your cyber partner, there's questions to ask is, okay, what is your experience? Are you having IT only or IT and OT, or do you do both? Or where are you? And if you don't have one or the other, who do you pass that risk on? Because every manufacturing has that. Then the other question I always like to ask any people that I do business with, who are you doing business with and can I talk to those people? And that's a good thing. For example, I know you, Sam, and if somebody has an ERP question to me and says, you know, talk to Sam because I have done business with him. He understands that he has helped me. So that gives you a good thing is ask the same questions as you buy in a car or on TV. Go to the specialist and ask them the tough questions. Is what can you do? How do you do it? And what do you protect? On can I talk to some of your customers? That's nothing. If they don't let you talk to any of their customers, I would say that's a little red flag. They're not telling you the whole story.
Okay, so let's touch a little bit on the preventive maintenance side of the story. And I think that also has some sort of implication on the claims, especially if, let's say, the manufacturers are trying to insure some of those equipments, right? So I don't know how closely these manufacturers track these equipments, how knowledgeable they are in terms of finding out whether a specific claim is going to be eligible or approved or not. So what is your recommendation? Let's say if a manufacturer is coming to an insurer, what would be your recommendation with respect to having the preventive maintenance processes so that they are not paying, let's say, as much on the insurance or on the premium?
So the insurance that you're probably referring to, the coverage would be called something like equipment breakdown coverage.
Okay.
And the way we look at this, and I go back to the car as an example, you know, you buy a new car, the OEM guy says, you know, every 5,000 miles do an oil change. Well, you bought this brand new machine for $200,000. You put it on your shop floor and you run it 24/7 for 3 years and the machine breaks. Well, now your productivity, your production is impacted. Deliveries to the customer are late. You have to bring overtime in to make up for this. That's all cost. And some of that cost or all of that cost, depending on how the policy is written, can be covered by equipment breakdown insurance. And again, there's different products out there. There's different levels of protection in there. But for me saying, okay, what do you do to prevent this car, this machine to break down? And then if I usually talk to the maintenance manager, the operation manager, they say, oh, we have the booklet from the original equipment manufacturing. And they say, change the oil every 5,000 miles and do this every 10 hours and do this. And we follow this. And I says, well, how do you know that your maintenance actually does it? Well, they just put a check mark on this sheet by the machine. And I'm like, that's not very good. So my question would be, do you have a computerized maintenance management system that links to your ERP, MRP, MES system? That data is actually done through a barcode scanner. You have a equipment asset that can track this and say, okay, at 5 o'clock this morning, maintenance went in. They did the oil change. They did this. They added this. And then they sign out and you have a work order history that actually documents. Now, that looks to me as a very good manufacturer that takes care of preventative maintenance. Now, the next step to this is, okay, they only do what the OEM says based on recommendation. If you use AI, machine learning, and the ERP system that has a good maintenance management model, you can actually take that a step further to predictive maintenance, to say in, okay, the manufacturer said if this machine runs 3,000 hours, you should do that oil change. However, if you run that machine at 50% at capacity, spindle load, or at 100, that wears different. So your predictive model will tell you bearing temperature is getting hotter at 2,000 hours. It will freeze or seize up at 2,500 hours. So you need to do something about this before. So that's the companies that I would really highly recommend to our people is because they're not just doing what the OEM said. They actually do real-time data analytics of the equipment. But today, man, I get this from a lot of customers I go in. Oh, this machine is 30 years old. There is a lot of sensor, aftermarket sensors that you for very low cost can implement or install even on legacy machines that's older than me. Again, if you can buy something new, it's better because usually your communication works better. A lot of the retrofits, you have to add PLCs and stuff to get the communication collected and then transfer it into a system. But think about this. When I look at your car, Sam,
yeah,
and it has things, dents, nicks, and scratches on it, and I say, Sam, when did you check your profile on the tire, the oil? I don't know. How much of a risk are you to me versus, wow, Sam, this car looks brand new, and you said it's 5 years old because I wash it every day. I check the profile every day, and then I have all those little sensors that tell me exactly which part of my car gets stressed more because we had the winter storm here and the temperatures dropped below freezing, so my coolant and my windshield washer fluid was stressed more, and I'm going to change it next week. So again, I go back to what we talked in the beginning, and you mentioned it yourself, risk assessment. You yourself look at the car with all the dents, the rust spots, and the tires falling off. You go in the shop where the guy says, I have 10,000 data points of this machine, and here's how what we do and how we respond to this data points. Who am I going to insure?
Yeah. So let's talk about this one, the risk exposure a bit, right, from the practical standpoint. So when you look at, let's say, if you're getting 100 claims in a day, what is the risk exposure of a standard SMB manufacturer? Are they insurable? Are they not insurable? What is the score, let's say, on a scale of 1 to 100? What do you see typically?
Well, we work in our industry, my company, we work with independent agents. So what they do is they actually interact with the customer. When they have a question on answer sheet, so they are answering some of those questions. When they are our first filter, and they go in and they say, well, how is your production plan running to your operational plan? And they say, well, we miss it every week. Well, that tells me that their equipment breaks down a lot. So right there, we can say, we don't even want to talk to them, right? Or if they say, oh, our on-time delivery is 99.8%. Well, the next question might be from the agent. Well, how did you get to 99.8%? Oh, we got this preventative maintenance program. Well, now we're going to like them, and we're going to look at their application, and we're going to process it, and we're going to consider all of that information in the rate analysis. But then we send the loss control person out because, you know, the agent works at a higher level. We send actually a loss control person out that looks at some of those things specific that we said, okay, out of the 10 criteria, 8 look really good. We're going to have to check on those 2 a little bit more. And then they bring that information back to underwriting. And then underwriting can look at it and says, okay, this is still a good risk. We give them a good premium. There is no surcharge for higher risk or any of this.
See, I want to touch a little bit more on that. So when you look at the SMB landscape, do they, let's say, trust insurance? Do they always carry the insurance? What kind of risk exposure do they have by not insuring? And I don't know if everybody carries, let's say, the equipment breakdown coverage, or if everybody carries the cyber coverage. Do they even try to get it? If they don't get it, do they try to improve their infrastructure and re-attempt to get it? So I'm looking at the common risk exposure of the small to medium-sized business.
So if we, for example, look at your application, we say, boy, this guy is super risky. We don't want him. The question is, where do you go? There are some mandatory insurance that the government requires of you. For example, in a lot of states, you are required to have workers' compensation. So an example would be if we would say the risk is too high, the agent takes it to the next company and they say the risk is too high, the risk is too high. Well, you do, on one hand, you get told that you have to have insurance. What you do is you go to an exchange. It's very similar like flood insurance. And you need to pay what you need that insurance. You need to pay what that pool basically asks you, which is usually not low cost. It's usually higher than what the market would ask you, but you're high risk. We don't want to deal with you. We don't have to insure you. If you are too high of a risk, we can say no. If it's a mandated insurance, you have to go to an exchange or to a pool, and your premiums are usually very high, plus a lot of the coverage is limited. For example, in a cyber case, which could be, we only pay $10,000 and that's it. Versus if you come to us and says, okay, here's my risk, we say, okay, we're going to protect you to X million dollars. So it really depends on how good of a risk you are. And if we don't take you, you usually have to go to a pool or self-insure yourself, which means every month you have to put money aside because if something happens, you have obligation to pay that. It's a little bit complicated at that time. You really need to talk to an insurance expert because the law varies by state.
Okay, so let me tell you a story that I heard on this podcast. So I don't know whether you have heard the episode with Carol Marzouk, and she actually does a lot of consulting from the HR perspective. And she was telling me one of the story of the manufacturer from the shop floor. There was a person who was inside the machine, and the other person actually turned on the machine. And because of that, there was a casualty on the shop floor. So I asked her, okay, what was the reason? I mean, this is crazy. This is something that nobody wants to see on the shop floor. But this happened. And she was mentioning that this was primarily the way they actually did the scheduling, the way they actually did their process coordination. And their scheduling was really done on the spreadsheet. And that is the case of the 90% of the manufacturers that we know that even though they might have an ERP system, but they don't really utilize, they don't really adopt. So in my mind, if I look at this story, Mike, then the risk of workers' comp is almost like 80%. But I can almost guarantee that they were insured from the workers' comp perspective. So do you guys not see this as a risk? Let's say if we talk about this specific scenario where they are clearly managing their scheduling on, let's say, spreadsheet, and that could be a nightmare, that there could be a real chaos. If you're doing your entire process coordination, for example, let's say on the spreadsheet, and you don't really have a clear scheduling process in which how you go from the step A to step B.
You actually, what you just mentioned, I did not hear that on your show, but I have heard that literally 100 times where life luck got lost. There's one thing is you probably all heard of OSHA, the Occupational Self and Safety and Health Organization. There is actually a procedure that you have to follow. It's called lockout, tagout. The equipment need to be de-energized before you can work out. And now again, we all have procedures. If you drive a car, it says 50 mile an hour speed limit, you go 60. The procedure said you should have been going 50, you go 60. So just because OSHA on the regulatory body says you have to have that doesn't mean people comply to this. And this is where a lot of insurance companies, they'll actually ask you, show me your procedures. Let me talk to those people. Do you, just because, Sam, you wrote it on a piece of paper that your people have to de-energize the equipment and lock out, tag out it, doesn't mean you followed. So the question is, there's something that we can pull as a loss history. We can go into this previous data and say, every year Sam has an accident. He keeps telling me he has a procedure, but he has an accident. So again, the risk goes up. We probably won't do business with you. On the other hand, we provide the service, your carrier, and this is the questions you need to have with your agent or your carrier. What services do you provide me, man? I have worked with some of our customers, develop a lockout, tagout procedure because OSHA audited their shop and they didn't have it documented. The shop foreman knew it in his head, but it wasn't written down anywhere. So OSHA said, that's not good enough. So they called on the insurance carrier, us. We came in, we sat down with them. We said, here's what you need to do. We need to qualify as an acceptable program by OSHA. That is really, I go back to what I mentioned something during the cyber discussion we had, is the reputation of that manufacturer, because this is going to leak out that a fatality happened because by not having a procedure or not following a procedure. You might have companies today with the social awareness that been customer for you for 10, 20 years. They might say, Sam's been in the news twice, but it wasn't good news. We're going to look for a different partner or supplier. So there's a big risk, not just from an insurance and an injury point. There's also a big risk that you might be out of business if you lose 3 or 4 of your top customers.
Yeah. All right. Amazing. That's it for today, Mike. This has been insightful. Do you have any last minute closing thoughts by any chance?
Well, you know, I go back. I do have some thoughts. And this is, we talked in the beginning how manufacturing is growing. And I think one of the things that manufacturers continue to struggle is the skills gap of finding the employers that they need. And there's it's an easy thing, you know. The stigma in manufacturing, and I'm going back to the 60s, was the 3 Ds, dirty, dangerous, and dungeness, right?
Yeah.
So you as a manufacturer have an obligation to change that stigma. And that is, you know, every year we have manufacturing day. Invite people, make sure the safety is in place. Bring high school kids, bring middle school kids into your school. Bring their parents in, because kids learn from their parents. Oh, Dad, why don't you work there anymore? Well, people got injured. It's a dirty job. It's a boring job. So update your image. You have as much a role in this as the whole industry. So that's one thing I would like to throw out there as the skills gap. And then I'm going to throw something else out there. You all heard the buzzword of big data, right? It's been around it. A lot of companies collect data and they don't even know what they're collecting and why they're collecting. You know, I go back to lean manufacturing, go to the basics, say, okay, what are my 5-10 key performance indicators? And how do I ensure that I have the information so I can look at this key performance indicators and make adjustments to hit my goals, to reach my goals? Carlia Fiorini, a former CEO of HP, said that one time, and I hope I quote her right. The goal is to turn data into information, and information into insight. Because you can have all the data in the world. If you don't look at it, this is information for me, and then turn that information into the insight, understanding your cyber risk, understanding your work comp risk, understanding your machine breakdown risk, understanding your customer's needs and wants.
Yeah, my personal takeaway from this conversation is going to be, yes, you might have SOPs, yes, you might have processes, but you have to really mean those processes if you don't want to increase the risk exposure for your company and get penalized by insurance companies. So on that note, Mike, I want to thank you for your time. This has been fun.
Sam, thanks for having me on.
I cannot thank our guests enough for coming on the show, for sharing their knowledge and journey. I always pick up learnings from our guests, and hopefully you learned something new today. If you want to learn more about Mike, head over to acuity.com. It's acuity.com. Links and more information will also be available in the show notes. If anything in this podcast resonated with you and your business, you might want to check other related episodes, including the interview with Chuck Coxhead from Presensus, who discusses warehouse mobility trends in the enterprise and SMB markets. Also, the interview with Martin Cloak, who discusses different barriers associated with artificial intelligence and Industry 4.0 adoption. Also, don't forget to subscribe and spread the word among folks with similar backgrounds. If you have any questions or comments about the show, please review and rate us on your favorite podcasting platform or DM me on any social channels. I'll try my best to respond personally and make sure you get help. Thank you, and I hope to catch you on the next episode of the WBS Podcast.
Thank you for listening to another episode of the WBS Podcast. Be sure to subscribe on your favorite podcasting platform so you never miss an episode. For more information on growth strategies for SMBs using ERP and digital transformation, check out our community at wbs.rocks. We'll see you next time.